ATVs and motorcycles that need work, Jim can and will repair them. That's right. If you've got a small engine that needs repair, just call Jim or Jeanette at 488-7373. And listen to this, folks. If you've got some painting or construction to finish up, they have the rental equipment you need to get the job done, whether it's saws, power tools, heaters, generators, pressure washers, loaders, or compactors. North Pole Equipment Rentals and Small Engine Repair will rent you the proper equipment to take care of those unfinished jobs. That's North Pole Equipment and Small Engine Repair, located at 3068 Badger Road, serving the people of North Pole and Fairbanks with quality small engine repair and equipment rentals. Give Jim or Jeanette a call, 488-7373 or 488-9339. Once again, that's 488-9339. Golden Nugget Taxi is a firm advocate of an educated Alaska mining industry, and they fully support the placer miners in their effort to provide a stable, healthy industry for Fairbanks and interior Alaska. If you're looking for value in transportation, call Golden Nugget Taxi at 451-TAXI. That's 451-8294. Remember, let's keep our mining industry strong, and when you need a lift around town, call Golden Nugget Taxi at 451-8294. Remember, Golden Nugget Taxi believes a working community is a healthy community. Let's work together to keep our mining industry strong. A message from Golden Nugget Taxi, which offers reasonable rates and courteous, friendly service. When you need transportation, call Golden Nugget Taxi, 451-8294. That's 451-TAXI. And by the way, tell them you heard of their support for the industry from Jim on KFAR's Alaska Gold Trails.
Turner for Notre Dame has been the favorite most of the season, at least until the last couple of weeks. But according to Notre Dame coach Lou Holtz, Brown has been hurting. He hasn't fully recovered from a separated shoulder injury suffered about a month ago. During the season, Brown averaged 167 all-purpose yards a game and 21 yards a catch for the Irish. Syracuse quarterback Don McPherson will be on hand tomorrow, and so will Pitt's Craig Hayward, Lorenzo White of Michigan State, and Gordy Lockbaum of Holy Cross. McPherson led the fourth-ranked Orangemen to an unbeaten season and a trip to the Sugar Bowl. And that bowl appearance is really what the Syracuse quarterback is thinking about these days.
I'm thinking about winning the Sugar Bowl, and, you know, of course, the hard thing's in the back of my mind. A lot of people are talking, but that's for other people to root for, and just need to keep playing football.
Tomorrow in Philadelphia, it's the 88th meeting between the Army and the Navy. For various reasons, both of the service academy programs have hit upon hard times, but still it's a spectacle worth attending. The cadets are 7-point favorites to win for the third time in the last 4 years. Tomorrow in the Hoosier Dome, close to 60,000 basketball fans will be on hand as the Big Four Classic kicks off, with Kentucky facing Indiana and Louisville taking on Notre Dame. Even though teams throughout the country have been playing for more than a week now, Eddie Sutton, coach of the Cats, says tomorrow's event really gets the season in high gear.
Even though basketball season has started, I would look at the doubleheader as really the introduction to college basketball for 87-88. You have four of the premier programs in intercollegiate athletics participating. And I think four of the premier teams that we have in college basketball this year.
Remember that goal awarded to New York Rangers goalie Bob Froese last Friday, the one that put him in the record books? Well, after reviewing videotapes of the game, the league today took it away. Froese would have been just the second goalie in the history of the league to come up with a goal, but now it's been credited to Rangers defenseman David Shaw. Shaw was judged to have been the last Ranger to touch the puck. In the Masters Tennis Tournament tonight, Mats Wilander plays Pat Cash, Yvonne Lindell meets Jimmy Connors, and Boris Becker takes on Brad Gilbert. For the ABC Information Network, I'm Johnny Holliday.
Good afternoon, folks, and welcome to Alaska Gold Trails. I'm your host, Jim Madonna, from the University of Alaska Fairbanks Mining Extension. This is your radio show on mining in Alaska, past, present, and future. More specifically, folks, gold mining in Alaska's misty past, controversial present, and, of course, mysterious future. I'll be with you here on KFAR 660 on your radio dial each Friday from 1 to 2 p.m., where we can discuss the entire spectrum of mining in Alaska, from the fascinating and colorful history of the major and minor gold rushes to the most recent gold prospecting and mining techniques. We can discuss such topics as how you can become rich and famous by making a fabulously rich gold discovery, or perhaps the role of education in the Alaska mining industry. And of course, we will have a special guest to discuss different mining-related topics. Some will discuss where the Earth's hidden treasures might be found, while others will tell us the rules we must follow to extract them. But most of all, my friends, give us a call if you have questions or care to make a comment on mining in Alaska. We would especially like to hear from some of the early pioneers. I know many of you must have some fascinating stories that perhaps you wouldn't mind sharing with us. So if you just want to chat for a few minutes or want to share one of your favorite frontier experiences, give us a call. The number is 479-TALK. That's 479-8255. Let's talk gold mining through the years along Alaska Gold Trails. My, but we have a fascinating program planned for you today. In just a few minutes, we're going to introduce our guest for today. That's Del Ackles, one of Alaska's most respected placer miners. But before launching into the thick of the program, let's do what we do to give away dinner for two at Laura's Gold Strike Cafe. And that, as you know, is our Frontier History Quiz. The first person to call us at 479-TALK, that's 479-8255, and give us the correct answer to our question, we'll win a $20 dinner for two at Laura's Gold Strike Cafe, located right across from the Daily News Miner. Now, folks, if you remember last week, we spoke about Felix Pedro and the fact that he discovered gold in the Fairbanks area in 1902. Today, a discovery monument marks the site where Felix Pedro struck it rich. And the question today is about how far from Fairbanks and on what Alaskan highway is this discovery monument located? Hello, you're on the air. This is Jim.
Yeah, it's about a little over 16 miles. It's on the Steese Highway.
Exactly correct. What's your name?
Byron Rogers.
Byron, you've just won dinner for two at Laura's Gold Strike. Do you know where it's located?
Sure do.
Okay, Byron, thanks a lot for the call. If you'll stop up here and pick up your ticket so anytime after 3 o'clock today, then you can go on over to Laura's and pick up your dinner for two.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks much, Byron.
Bye.
Well, our guest today, as I said earlier, is Del Ackles, one of Alaska's placer miners. How are you today, Del?
Great to be here to talk to you today.
Well, you've had gained a great deal of recognition in the placer mining industry of Alaska. Tell us, Del, how did you come about coming to Alaska originally?
Well, that goes back quite a while ago, Jim. I first came to Alaska actually in the military in 1961. And spent about a year and a half in Anchorage, and after that time went back to Seattle, and about 2 months later, or 3 months later, came back to Alaska with NASA.
How long did you stay with NASA then after returning to Alaska?
Well, I worked with the NASA satellite tracking program for about 9 years out of the Gilmer Creek facility out at 13 miles Steese, and it was a very interesting 13 years. I've got to admit, very enlightening 13 years that I spent with them. It was very enjoyable.
Just what capacity did you hold there, Dale?
Well, I worked in their engineering department there, and mostly responsible for the construction and the maintenance of most of their physical structures there as far as their tracking dishes and such.
After your 13-year period with them, what kind of businesses did you enter into, or did you enter into right into mining at that time, or did you have some other activities that you entered into?
Well, basically, there were several things going on. My wife at that time was operating a wholesale retail business in beauty products and beauty goods, and we had also retail stores here in Fairbanks, one of them being Piccadilly Wigs, which opened up in the Gurora Mall when it first opened. That's kind of a fascinating story in itself, for the fact that it started in our basement right after the flood. But I won't tell you the reason why we got into that particular business, because my wife, I probably should say that, Jim, for her to tell you. That's how I met her. But from that point,
let me ask you a question here, Del. How did you meet her through selling wigs?
Well, she talked me into. I knew her as an acquaintance, and she talked me into her giving her a shampoo one day with a little bleach rinse with it, and her hair happened to fall out. And she was amusing with a crew cut, and that's how we got in the wig business.
So then she went out and had to sample a few styles to cover up your mistake. Is that it?
Well, it wasn't my mistake. I was just horrified because it's difficult to give somebody a shampoo when their hair is coming off of your hand. The upsetting thing was it did plug the drain. But at that time, Ray in Fairbanks, there were no facilities or no outlets or retail outlets or even wholesale outlets for anything dealing with wigs or such. And because of that, that's how she got started. She did find one that was used, bought it at a high price to be able to cover up the bald spot. But from that point on, that's how she got into the business on that end. She is a hairdresser by trade, so.
See, was that a fairly lucrative business then, Dell?
Well, sure. At that time, she was doing quite well at it, getting back to the mining end of it and working for NASA at the same time. We acquired the properties that we got started on in about 1965. They were located up in the Steese Highway next to Eagle Summit on Goldust Creek. And we acquired the properties basically in the early days, not because of being very attractive at that time as far as gold, for the fact that gold was about $38 an ounce, but it was done for the prospective potential that may have. But at the same token, we acquired the properties also for peace of mind, getting away the hustle bustle of town and the business pressures. It was a nice place to go to.
Mm-hmm. So, kind of relaxing then.
And it's kind of funny how some investments along the line like that might turn into occupation later on. That become fairly interesting transition between what we were doing.
Mm-hmm. So originally you went up there for some recreational activity, including small-scale gold mining, and then from that point on it developed into a larger and larger operation.
Yes.
Well, Dell, I'd like to get into the development of your larger scale operations there on Gold Dust Creek in just a minute, right after these important announcements. I want to talk just a minute about Tim Schroeder over at Import Auto Body. He's located at 2201 Judd Street, right next to the Jade Shop, and Tim is there ready to serve you with free estimates and, of course, excellence in body work. And, of course, they also offer insurance estimates. Now, Import Auto Body uses the very finest materials available. Also, they have a unibody frame straightening and alignment machine. Using this latest technology, they simply put your car on the machine, then realign the frame to factory specifications. And, folks, you want to keep in mind that this machine is not limited to imports. Factory replacements, you bet, they've got them. Window replacements, they can do that too. Restoration, of course, the very finest in Fairbanks. They feature famous, genuine Saab parts, and they have a urethane primer that will make your car like new. Find a deal on a used import that only needs minor repairs and take it to Import Auto Body. They can fix it up for you. Import Auto Body, specializing in quality auto body repairs. They are located at 2201 Judd Street, right next to the Jade Shop. Give Tim a call at 451-8456. That's 451-8456. One of the other fine sponsors that support Alaska Gold Trails, of course, is Larson's Jewelry. When you think about jewelry, you think about quality. And when you want quality, you think about Larson's Jewelry, located at 4th and Noble. That's where you can rely on quality and originality, whether you're looking for wedding rings and bands or a special piece for that special person. Larson's Jewelry has been in business since 1946, and they offer a full jewelry and goldsmithing service. That means they can take raw gold and create rings, bracelets, necklaces and earrings right on the spot and in a design of your choice. Larson's can also add diamonds, rubies, sapphires, or other gemstones from their large inventory to your new or existing jewelry piece. They can repair and rebuild jewelry, including shanks, loops, and chains. It's a comfortable feeling when you know you're getting quality as well as value. At Larson's Jewelry, they have a fine selection of silver sets and crystal that's sure, with time, to become a family treasure. And for a special gift that will be long remembered, they now have a new glass etching and engraving service. But listen, folks, Larson's is much more than a jewelry store. Their wide selection of beautiful trophies and plaques can be personalized to commemorate special occasions or achievements. For your safety and peace of mind, Larson's also has a complete locksmithing service, including installation and servicing of all types of locks and safes. For anything you need, they have it on hand. Just remember, Larson's can. located at 4th and Noble, open 9 to 6 weekdays and 9 to 5 Saturdays. Visit today or give them a call at 456-4141. We're here on Alaska Gold Trails, ladies and gentlemen. Our guest today is Del Ackles from Gold Dust Mining. And if you should happen to have a question of Del, feel free to call us here at 459-TALK. Del, tell us, how did your mining operation develop from the early beginnings to the transition up to large-scale mining as you now have I guess you're not Gold Dust anymore, are you? You're out it.
Well, we just made a move because of pending lawsuits and problems with the Bureau of Land Management. We have moved our operation now into the Alaska Range, Jim.
And prior to that, Del, after you and Gail started your recreation up there on Gold Dust, how did you progress in the mining operation?
Well, just like everybody else, generally most operations had started out small and they developed from that point. Basically, what made us actually pursue this as a business was twofold. Number one, the beginning of the construction of the Alaska Pipeline brought a lot of people into town. And as far as the businesses that my wife was involved with, she was extremely busy with that, and it was becoming more burdensome to keep people around because of the fact that it was harder to find qualified people for her business at that time. And the fact that there were so many people in town, I got to be probably one of the main offenses as far as driving the wrong way on one-way streets. Anybody that's been here for any length of time that's all of a sudden had one-way streets pop up because of the increased traffic, I know what I'm talking about. So it was a combination of a little of everything. NC Fabic at that time, that supplied most equipment to the pipeline, come by one afternoon and offered us a price on our house we couldn't refuse. We didn't even have it for sale, Jim, to give you an idea how the thing's happening. And then a woman walked in off the street one day and offered a price for the business that my wife couldn't refuse. And then it was the subject of what I was going to do with my job with NASA. And ironically, at that time, the contract was coming close to an end, so I did have a decision point, and Gail kind of helped me on that. She said she was going to the cabin with or without me, so that helped me on that part of the decision. And so it was a nice break from what was happening here in Fairbanks and the increased traffic and the increased people here. So we did have an opportunity, being unique in one way, that we did kind of enter this new occupation or this new field without having too much monetary worry. And that was an advantage that we had over most other people. So from that, we sold our houses, sold our businesses, basically, and bought a single piece of equipment and moved to Gold Dust Creek. And it was quite an adventure from there on.
Was there any attraction of gold that played a role in this, Del, or was it just the movement into the more frontier environment that was attractive to you? Just what was the lure? Was there gold?
Well, it was probably both, Jim. At that time, there had been several years that had passed since we had actually acquired this property. And in 1972, when the price of gold was deregulated here in this country, it jumped significantly to where we went back and re-seriously looked at the values we did have there. So, and the fact that there were so many people in town here and the hustle bustle that we were tired of, we decided to get away from it. So it was a double situation there that kind of made a very enjoyable change for us to get away from the hustle bustle of Fairbanks at that time and to also be out there in the woods and to look at the gold or the values in the ground as a future livelihood. So it was a twofold situation for us.
During your period up there at Gold Dust Creek, what prompted you to start a larger scale gold mining operation? It seems to me that I recall a conversation that we were having once where you discovered some drill logs that had been produced several years prior to your arriving on Gold Dust Creek, and that was helped you to make the decision on whether or not you were going to start a full-scale mining operation.
Well, that had probably the main basis of why we decided to get into that as a livelihood, for the fact that for us to duplicate the information that we had found, and this, the drill log you're talking about, was actually found after the lodge at Circle City had burnt down in the mid-60s. And out of the stuff that was in the basement that they did salvage was a copy of the old drill logs, which was given to me for the fact that they finally recognized which creek it was. But it was drilled by the FE company, which was a very reliable source of information for figuring out any type of mineral reserves on any creeks in Alaska. They were very expertise in what they did accomplish in their drilling program. So I took this as a first face value of being valid information. For me at that time, Jim, to actually duplicate what was on that log would have been several hundreds of thousands of dollars. So since that end of it was already taken care of, we could plot reserves and we could from that point figure out actually what we had to do to make a living. So yes, that probably had was the main turning point in actually really deciding if we were going to pursue this very seriously or not. And since the values were there, we went ahead and bought some equipment and we started on a small scale.
Well, I'd like to get into the larger scale operation just a minute after these messages, Del. Robert and Charlene and James Johnson own and operate a family business here in Fairbanks called Arctic Springs at 285 Alta Way. They started manufacturing leaf springs and U-bolts for all sizes and types of vehicles and heavy equipment several years ago. Because of their interest in developing a leaf spring manufacturing plant in Fairbanks, they became one of the first businesses to be awarded the use of the Made in Alaska logo for businesses using Alaskan products and labor. To give you an example of what they can do over there on Alta Way in their 6,000 square foot manufacturing plant, listen to this. They manufacture and recondition springs for snow machine, cars, trucks, heavy equipment, and get this, folks, even aircraft. Springs can be re-arched and U-bolts cold bent to your specifications, and they can raise and lower your vehicle. Arctic Springs handles both standard and custom-made coil springs. Just look at what they stock. A complete line of steel, brass, rubber, and Teflon bushings, torsion bar axles for auto trailers, snow machine trailers, and weasels. Finally, folks, they build trailers to your specifications, so bring in your blueprints or sketch. In addition, they have two huge 30-inch by 8-foot heat treatment ovens, which can accommodate just about any material that needs heat treating. Ask Bob over there what kind of service he has for you placer miners. That's Bob, Charlene, and James Johnson at Arctic Springs, 285 Alta Way. Give them a call at 451-8612. Well, it's bonanza time. Robbie at Tip Top Chevrolet says all 1987 trucks must go. They're having a giant year-end truck sale for power, performance, and comfort. You can't beat a Chevrolet truck. The 6-year, 60,000 miles limited warranty is standard. Come in, look them over, take a test drive. No reasonable offer will be refused. Tip Top Chevrolet has what you want, whether gas or diesel, 2 or 4-wheel drive, small, comfortable and sporty, or a full-size work truck. Robbie is ready to deal. For the best selection and the best prices, stop in today at Tip Top Chevrolet, 1916 South Cushman. Listen to the components on some of these sale models. The S10 Blazers have a powerful 2.8-liter V6 with electronic fuel injection. A smooth ride with fully independent front suspension is standard. Excellent visibility. Bucket seats in front are standard on the S10s. Handsome styling with comfort and convenience. All units in stock have 4-wheel drive. Now the S10 pickups have heavy-duty construction, sizes to fit your needs, heavy-duty payload package, fully independent front suspension, hot wax coating on the entire frame helps fight effects of road silt and dirt. On the full-size pickups, we have electronic fuel injection, now standard. Vortec V6 engine, one of the most powerful standard engines in a half-ton pickup. Fleet-side or step-side boxes are available, as are crew cab or bonus cab. And your option, whether gas or diesel power. That's Tip Top Chevrolet, 1916 Cushman Street. Phone 452-8211. And don't forget Robbie's little safety tip. Buckle up with Tip Top Chevrolet. Well, Del, what have you got in terms of developing that large-scale mining operation on Gold Dust Creek? You took the drill logs and you made some interpretations. And, of course, that probably led to some value to the land. And so from that point, what did you proceed?
Well, the large scale really wasn't developed until a little later on, after we did get started in mining, Jim. We only started out with one piece of equipment, which was a D8-sized tractor, and the first couple of years was actually not really spent mining too much, but establishing a road that we could get back and forth on. Basically, the only way we got in there before was to walk, and everything we had was either came in with a track vehicle or was carried on our back. So the mining continued on for about 4 or 5 years under that scale with just more or less just my wife and myself and one piece of equipment. And from that point on, like I say, at that time, unfortunately, we weren't in a position where we had to worry too much about money, so it wasn't really evident that we should make a living doing this. But after about 4 years of enjoying ourselves more or less taking life easy, it became quite evident that we were spending money faster than we were recovering it, so that we had to get more serious about it. So that's what decided what we should do as far as larger scale.
And you started out now with this one D8 size cat and a single sluice box. And when you say you got larger scale, what did that mean?
Well, there was two reasons why we had to develop something that was more productive. Number one, at that time, the regulations on this particular industry were constantly changing, and it was quite evident that there had to be certain other things that had to be done, to pay for this. And another reason was for the fact that Gale generally was worth about $150 a day if she didn't leave the cabin, and she always cost me at least $500 if she ever did. Joking aside, she's not here to defend herself. No,
Gail, I'd like to make a note here that Gail will be on the show.
Oh no,
she'll have a chance to get back at what you say here today. So keep that in mind.
No, it wasn't for her encouragement. I sure wouldn't have been in this industry to start with. So I'm sure she'll have her chance to get her stabs back.
It's a pretty happy lifestyle mining out in the wilderness, isn't it?
Well, it's probably been the most enjoyable part of our lives here for the last 10 to 12 years for both of us. And it's just been something, Jim, and an experience that I really can't fully describe to you. It's been tremendous, and it's been my wife sometimes calls it premature retirement. Other people calls it retirement in another sense, but in the same token, it's really nice to be around the family 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, and this type of business has generated that, and it's really been enjoyable on that end, and I'm really fortunate at the age that I am to be able to enjoy that instead of waiting until I'm 60 or 65 years old. So I've had the best part of the deal on that end of it, and the mining, placer mining, has afforded me that particular asset, and it's been unreplaceable.
I'd like to take a minute to remind the listening audience that they're listening to Alaska Gold Trails, and we have as our guest today Del Ackles. And of course, Del is one of the more prominent placer miners in the state of Alaska. And if you should have a question of Del regarding placer mining or the mining industry, why don't you give us a call here at KFAR, and the number is 479-TALK. That's 479-8255. Let me talk a little bit about one of my favorite sponsors on Alaska Gold Trails, and that, of course, is B&L Pawn Shop at the corner of Gaffney and Cushman, which is the most unpredictable variety store in Fairbanks. Now, folks, I've said this many, many times, and that statement is an understatement. It's more like having a giant garage sale in one room. One-stop shopping will get you everything. Just to give you an idea, let me list a few items. Jewelry, clocks, stereos, headphones, guns, scopes, winches, propane bottles, tools, hats, musical instruments, cameras, TVs, radios, typewriters, and the list goes on and on and on. In fact, you can get anything at B&L Pawn. B&L traditionally has offered tremendous savings, but in addition, if you tell Killer you heard it on KFAR, she'll even sweeten the deal. And if you tell her you heard it from Jim on Alaska Gold Trail, she'll even sweeten it more. If your money is a little tight, They'll be happy to help you out. Bring in anything you feel is of value or use, and the folks at B&O Pawn will loan you the money to get through to better days. Or if you sell items on consignment, they'll work with you on that too. So if you're looking for anything from snowshoes to diamond rings, see the folks at B&O Pawn, 605 Gaffney. Jim, Bruce, and Killer will be happy to deal. Killer never says no. They'll sell anything but the chandelier, and only then because it's attached. However, ask Killer, you just never know. That's B&O Pawn, corner of Gaffney and Cushman, 452-6491. Open 9 to 7 Monday through Friday, 9 to 5 Saturday, and 12 to 5 on Sunday. And remember, tell Killer you heard it here on Alaska Gold Trails, and she'll sweeten the deal. Once again, we're back here with Dell Eccles, and I think we've got a call coming in, Dell, so if you'll hold it just a minute. Hello, you're on the air.
Hello. Has the answer to your question you asked at the beginning of the show been answered?
Yeah, we had an answer. Did you have an answer?
Yes, I did.
What was your answer?
It was on the Steese Highway, about 13 miles out.
That's pretty close, and I'll tell you what, why don't you stop over at Alaskan Prospectors and pick up a free piece of Alaskan placer gold. How's that?
All right. Where is that?
It's at 504 College Road. And thank you very much for the call.
All right. Thank you. Bye.
Okay, Dell, you want to continue on with the adventures on Goldust Creek with us?
Well, like I say, Jim, we start out on a fairly small scale. Our total investment for getting into what we did was only about $50,000 at that time. And after about, like I say, 2 or 3 years, it became evident we had to do other things to not only improve our production, but to really take a serious look at this as being an occupation. A lot of humorous things do happen in the line of mining. Ironically, most of them are centered around the outhouse, but in our case, a lot of them weren't. And I think the most memorable days, though, were the early days when we did start, because just like any other business, after you do get established, it becomes, in some sense, parts of it becomes quite redundant and becomes an obligation. But the early parts of the experiences on Goldust was a tremendous experience for the whole family. Two of my children actually grew up on that particular creek, and after being on that creek for about the last 20 years, you can't help but have some fond experiences and memories that are associated with it. So, but the mining itself, as far as getting in larger scale operations, started taking place in the 80s, about 1980-81. And it was quite evident to me at that time that to improve our productions there, and to improve our recoveries, and also to take in considerations of the environmental changes that were happening at that time, it was evident that the type of technology we had really didn't address this. So we hit from that point, Jim, we basically started investing a lot of time and energy into looking at new technology that would give possible answers to the environmental questions that were coming up at that time, and also to provide additional income to offset the cost of this particular thing. And so things can get re-involved past that point. We did, from that time, develop some quite unique machinery for the industry that, at least for the scale of mining that we're doing now, and also develop some fairly good environmental quality that's come out of it.
Up to this time, then, you were using, what, the conventional sluicing system? You started out with a single sluice and then graduated to, what, the triple sluice?
Yes, we went through that particular phase, and to incorporate and to increase productions at that time with that type of a setup, our first sluice box was $1,800, to give you an example, and it was a single-run sluice box, about 60 foot long. Later on, the side boxes were added, and other gold-saving devices were added. It was quite evident that there was, at least on that particular creek, a lot of fine gold that we were missing in the process. So incorporating different things in that sluice at that time for what our budgets would allow wasn't really that much of an expansion of any technology. But we experimented with different devices. This UHMW plastic was experimented with for punch plates and riffle tops and stuff like that for gold saving devices. And We did make some gains in that particular thing because with that addition, we for the same amount of water we're using with that old technology, we were able to almost double our production. So we were experimenting around with things at that time that has never really been tried with the industry. And it's a type of a occupation or industry you get into, Jim, that you really can't prepare yourself for, at least at that time, because the only thing that people could relate to placer miners at that time were, you know, that they had to be awful rich or foolish or both. And the schooling and various other things that was available, even through the mining extension in the early 60s, was quite limited. So it was kind of an experience that you learned on the job. And from that, it was quite an experience just experimenting with the different ideas that people would have. I've never seen so many mouse traps built to catch one single mouse in my life. Some of them are quite unique. Some of them are you know, quite humorous. So.
Well, that was the period of time then your transition into the higher technology when you decided to take the quantum leap and bring in a new style plan into the Alaskan mining, placer mining industry. And what were the sequence of events that led up to that, Del?
Well, I spent a considerable time, almost 2 years, looking through placer recovery systems. And I'm not talking about gold or silver. I'm talking about throughout the world and all the placer types of deposits you may have. And the tin industry being, at that time, the most attractive to look at actually drew me to the tin industry for two reasons. Number one, the type of material that that they were recovering, which is your raw tin or your cassiterite, had a specific gravity or weighed a lot less than gold. And they were, at that time, obtaining extremely high recoveries in such a light material. So I looked for the tin industry for this technology, and I did have the opportunity to spend some time in Southeast Asia and aboard some dredges that both Belaton and Shell Oil had owned. And there's one thing that was quite evident at that time, that the jig process of the jig separation process was seemed to be about the world's number one recovery process for that particular industry. So from that, we had designed a plant that was eventually built by a company called IHC, and ironically it's the same company now that also built the Bema dredges off the coast of Nome. The type of equipment I built was a portable outfit that was suitable for Alaska terrain as far as mobility to move it to different sites with real good water quality use with it. Otherwise, it used very little water for the same production that we had in the past. Of course, it's a lot more expensive, Jim. You're talking $1,800 mm-hmm. for a box when we first started, and then we ended up spending $1.5 million for the second one.
Mm-hmm.
So it was, you're right, it was quite a quantum leap for us as far as the financial obligations and stuff that we had to look at. We had to justify this with our reserves, and at that time, we did have this justification.
Del, we've got a call here for you, I think. Hello, you're on the air. You have a question for Del?
Yeah, I was wondering which theme song did you guys ever pick for that show? I never found out which one it was.
Oh, we selected Spanish Flea.
Oh, well, I had it, the one I was going to put in. I was going to play you two bars of it. Do you want to hear it?
Yeah, give us the few bars.
Okay. Here we go. Coming right up.
Okay, let's hear it. Well, it's way up north with Johnny Horton. As a matter of fact, that particular song was submitted, and the people who voted on the theme song, selected the Spanish Flea.
You like that one better, huh?
Well, the people in the audience, listening audience, voted on the theme song, and that's the one they selected, Spanish Flea.
Well, you can't argue with them.
No, you can't argue with them, can you? Thank you very much for your call.
Thanks, bud.
Well, let's take a break here for a minute, Del, and let's tell the folks about Gabe's Truck and Auto.
Go for it.
Whether it's an auto, light truck, motorhome, or big rig, for the best service in town, it's Gabe's Truck and Auto. And By the way, folks, that's not just my opinion. Last year, the Fairbanks Chamber of Commerce gave Gage Truck and Auto their prestigious Raven About Fairbanks Award for providing the best vehicle service in Fairbanks. Gage has two large shops and eight mechanics on hand to serve you. With that much attention, you will get fast, courteous service and have your vehicle back in a hurry. In addition to engine and general vehicle maintenance, Gabe's can also repair automatic transmissions, realign front ends, and repair, mount, and balance tires. New and rebuilt engines come with a 12-month or 12,000-mile warranty. As you can see, Gabe's is a one-stop service center. And if you need an IM inspection, you're going to love this one, folks. Gabe's has a no-pass, no-pay policy. That's right. If you don't pass, you don't pay at Gabe's. Gabe's also has a special deal for you folks who are getting your vehicle ready for winter. If you get an oil change, filter and lube, or tune-up at Gabe's, you'll also get a free winterization inspection. This 30-minute inspection covers such items as heater antifreeze, check gearboxes, inspect fan belts, battery, and all fluid levels in your vehicle. And don't forget Gabe's towing service. He has three wreckers available 24 hours a day and can handle any size rig. Getting a tow is as easy as calling 456-6156. With this icy weather, you might want to write that number down and put it in your glove box. You can turn your rag into a ride at Gabe's Truck and Auto, located off Van Horn, right near Metro Field. Give him a call. The number, once again, is 456-6156. And I think that we have a call for us here, Dell. Hello, you're on the air.
Yeah, I wanted to ask him some questions. He's been mining here in Alaska then?
Yeah, Dell's been in Alaska for a number of years.
Yeah, I wondered what, on that turbidity thing with the water, you know, I had heard someone earlier point out on one of the other shows about when the ice goes out in the spring, you know, and the amount of dirt and silt that's kicked up into the rivers, you know, and how vast the pollution thing is, and then here they are trying to hold it against the miners. I had wondered, in all the placer mining he'd seen, has there really been that much damage to the environment, or is he actually done like BLM has, where they burn out the whole valley, well, they scrape the valley out, and then it regrows back in willow? Is that, you know, do you think that's a little better setup than BLM going in there and torching that valley?
Well, your question about water quality is, you're correct in a lot of assumptions you're making. It's perceived to be the damage on water quality as far as turbidity and several solids is perceived to be something that is probably more destructive than what may be. A good example is Gulf Stream Valley, with several millions of cubic yards of material that was dredged out of there in the early 20s and 30s, Gulf Stream Valley, after the mining had shut down, was immediately one of the better producing fish streams in the interior here as far as small fish streams. The enhancement of the area as far as the areas that were dredged, again, the willows and stuff that grew back in Gulf Stream Valley came in very quickly and produced a wide variety of food for different animals. And in a sense, it did the same thing as what BLM tried to accomplish by having their area burns. Area burns are designed to get rid of the spruce and some of the tundra and to have the willows grow back in. Well, the mining does produce the same thing. To get into the emotional aspects of what turbidity or salable solids do to the environment as far as the mining being mining related is more of an emotional problem now than what it is a physical problem that they're looking at. So there are some changes that are going to be made along that line. You're correct that in the spring the drainages do produce more turbidity and set up a solids to the drainages during the runoff period than all the mining does during the summer. But you got to remember that this is accounted as a natural occurrence, and there's a lot of difference how people perceive a natural occurrence as made comparisons with a man-made comparisons or man-made situation. So there's a lot of work that's got to be done on that line, and we have been quite active in it.
I had wondered because, you know, I'd looked at all the large dredges, and in fact, which one is it? It's the one out across from the Chattanooga Lodge, I believe. Doesn't the University of Alaska own that one?
No, negative. That's not owned by the University of Alaska, but that dredge did operate up into the 50s and was a very significant producer of gold.
Well, see, I'd heard that someone was actually going in and attempting to rebuild it at one time to try and set it back up to use, and I'd wondered, with a dredge like that, if you really have a turbidity problem because you don't really feed off of the stream. They dig down into the water table and then float on the water table itself in the area.
That is true in a certain context, but you've got to understand how these dredges work. They do have to have large amounts of fresh water that's brought back into the ponding systems, not only to keep the ponding systems there, but you have what they call a non-point source of water from that point that does leach out through the channeling piles, that does get back into the stream drainages. Determining what point this becomes harmful seems to be more of an emotion issue than a scientific issue at this time.
Even with all the millions of cubic yards they turned over, they never bothered a single well out there. They never polluted, you know, anything that you could see that would have any problems. Like you say, the Goldstream Valley has become one of the better little fishing areas in there. Because I'd looked at a couple of those, I'd wondered why someone hadn't been able to go back in and actually set one back up again. From what I've seen, a lot of people have gone through just the tailing piles alone and actually pulled 1 and 2 ounce pieces out just with a metal detector. It'd be, you know, it surprises me that someone hasn't actually gone out and redone the Fox Valley again or that one out there by the Chattanooga Lodge again.
Well, that becomes an economic question, and that does have a lot to do with what the laws and regulations say. It tells a company or an individual what they should or should not do to prepare themselves. To rehab the old dredge could be a very, very costly thing. In a lot of contexts, it's probably cheaper to buy a new one, to go out and redo one of those dredges, to bring it up to date, to get good water quality and good recovery out of it. You're talking several million, and in a lot of cases, a large dredge like that could be in tens to hundreds of millions of dollars to modify them. You can buy probably, in a lot of contexts, newer or new equipment for the same price it would take to rehab it. The question about the nuggets, the Channings, you are right. They didn't get it all. There's a lot of fine gold left there, too. And that's to do with the technology they used at that time. That dredge was primary sluice box gravity separation. And they do have higher technology now that could make possibly those tailing piles out there economic to look at again. As far as the large gold, those dredges were only set up with certain size of trommel screens. And if the large nuggets that you've been talking about that have been found at that time were deemed actually uneconomical to try to save. Otherwise, the dredges were set up with trommel screens that only had 3/4 inch or 1 inch holes in them. Anything over that size would go to the tailing piles. But if that constitutes 1 or 2% of your total gold that you may recover, and the type of technology you're using at that time could have had an advantage. The dredges had a tremendous advantage over sluice box operations for the fact that they could handle a lot of material very cheaply. They didn't worry about that 1% they lost. Someday in the future, you may be right. They will go back and look at it. But it's a subject of economics, of what it's going to take physically, economically, to rehab the dredge and also to look at the new laws and regulations that they have to operate under.
Yeah, that's what I'm striking at, is the fact that their laws and regulations are what cause you to not be able to go out and work that ground, because there's so much impact against that dredge that they make it feasibly uneconomical. You know, you just cannot get up against it and work with your equipment again now, because there seems to be such damage. Yet when they built the dike, I worked on that project out there, and they ran a lot of homes, they ran the wells dry when they were pumping out those ponds to dig those gravel pits out there, those lakes.
Well, that's true. That did happen, and but you got to understand that's the federal government. When they do things, it doesn't have to be cost-effective.
Yeah, and it was a government project, see, and they didn't, you know, it seemed like they didn't have to, pay the bills on that. They did all that, and they got away with it, and here you are trying to make a living, and they're coming up against you, and they're causing a tremendous amount of problem, it seems like, because there seems to be a tremendous amount of gold out there yet. There's a lot of places that can be worked, but they're economically not feasible, and yet gold is worth more now than when I'd seen them take it out of the Fox area. There was a place where they took almost $5 million out of just a quarter square mile area, you know. That's, just amazes me.
Well, that's very true, but I think we're kind of in an impasse right now, and I think a lot of these problems will be straightened out in the future. So there's a lot of things that's got to be changed to make things economic as far as this industry. And the people are now becoming aware that there is a problem out there, and I think things will be changed.
Look, guys, we're running out of time here. We're going to have to bring it to a close. Thank you for the call, and here's a message from one of our fine sponsors of Alaska Gold Trails. I know everybody would like to strike it rich, and you know that's exactly what will happen if you travel out to 16-mile Chena Hot Springs Road and dine at Two Rivers Lodge. What an evening you'll have! An enchanting log structure with frontier decor, complete with a solarium overlooking a beautiful tree-bordered lake. What a pleasant setting for your dining pleasure. If you enjoy exciting new tastes, the menu alone will be enchanting. Their appetizers include such delicacies as shrimp cocktails, stuffed mushroom caps, and the one I enjoy, hot and spicy chicken. Give it a try. I guarantee you'll love it. There's a complete list of main dishes, including veal plate, and of course, their fresh seafood and chicken plates. And of course, the pleasures of steaks shouldn't be overlooked. And for dessert, my favorite, grapefruit pie, a fluffy body with bits of grapefruit spread throughout to add a delightfully tangy taste. Drinks, they have anything you might want, and perhaps some you have never heard of. And you don't want to forget Two Rivers Special, and that's, of course, Coconut Brownie. That's Two Rivers Lodge, located at 16-mile Chena Hot Springs Road. For reservations, phone 488-6815. Once again, for reservations, phone 488-6815 and tell Stasha and Don that Jim on KFAR's Alaska Gold Trail sent you. Hector's Welding, located at 13-mile Richardson Highway, has been serving Alaska for 40 years. Talk about steel and iron stock for any job you have. Hector's has over 600 tons of stock on hand. Keep that in mind, folks. Their 14,400 square foot shop is capable of handling the most demanding work quickly and efficiently. Listen to this list of services. They can replace dozer blade liners. They also rebuild loader buckets and ripper shanks. They do heavy equipment repairs and modifications. And, of course, mining equipment fabrication is their specialty, including sluice boxes, conveyors, feeders, grizzlies, screening plants. They also fabricate specialized riffles and punch plate. They have a portable welding unit for fast on-site repairs. Hector's fully equipped fabrication shop is ready to serve you. Bring in your ideas and blueprints. It's a well-known fact that anywhere in the interior where the big jobs are done, men in the field depend on Hector's for proven, rapid, reliable work. Rush jobs are no problem. Remember, Hector's Welding has been getting the job done and done right for 40 years. And now, an all-new service, Flocculence. Hector's is the gel log distributor. Keep that in mind, placer miners. There's a free test kit available. All you have to do is stop out at Hector's and pick up the kit. Remember, it's free. Wherever Alaska's miners are working, Hector's is the first name in gold recovery equipment, located at 13-mile Richardson Highway. Give them a call out there for information at 488-6432. Dell, we were talking about the a new plant that you had built for you by IHC Holland, and this, of course, was a what I understand, a three-stage jig plant. Is that correct?
That's correct, Jim. It's a three-stage trommel plant that when I first proposed to IHC to have constructed, there was a little resistance to it for the fact that they hadn't built anything that small. To me, it's a fairly good-sized unit. It's about as big as a two-story building, but we spent about a year and a half, exchanging drawings and ideas on what this thing should be constructed like. But basically, we were looking at the remote needs for a efficient plant that had good water quality use, and this is what we ended up with.
And did this plant then solve your water quality problems?
Well, the water quality problems were drastically reduced with this plant for the fact that in our old operations, to maintain around a 200-yard an hour capacity, we were using as high as 5,500 to 6,000 gallons a minute as far as water in our washing process. Yes, they reduced it with the cyclone circuits. They can reduce it as low as 300 gallons, and it's a significant difference. And because of this, you don't have the discharges.
You also got significant fine gold recovery out of it, didn't you?
This plant, I've really had a lot of fun with this plant, and I'm still experimenting with it as far as, and being mystified with what it will do as far as mineral recovery. Basically, it has the ability to go after lighter minerals to make gold a byproduct. And as far as fine gold, we found stuff that we didn't even believe existed, and it's really been unique working with it.
That's fantastic. Well, Dell, once again, we're here and the time has slipped away. I want to thank you, Dell Ackles, for sharing your time with us today, and I'm sure everybody enjoyed your presentation, and we've learned a lot. I also want to thank the listening audience for taking part in the program with your letters and your calls. Keep them coming. We love it. Next week's guest is Paul Borelka, a pioneer Alaskan prospector and miner. It's been fun, folks. This is Jim Madonna on Alaskan Gold Trails. Until next week, happy prospecting.
ABC News, I'm Doug Limerick. They're cold, they're tired, and they're surrendering at the federal prison in Atlanta. Talking about the Cuban inmates who took over that prison and held it for 12 days, reporter Jim Newton of the Atlanta Constitutional...